Hi, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is Brandon Bruce. What I love about him is, first of all, he's really tall, so he'll tell you about that. But the second thing is that he is going to talk to us about some really interesting techniques, strategies, tactics that he's using in his company. So he's like feet on the street, fighting the war, in the zone, and is going to give us some tips on top of funnel. What's really cool is that he just briefly described, before we got on live, referral with prospects. So I really would love him to talk about that, because that's something that referrals are really important for us, as we all know. But it's usually tied to clients. So if we're business developers and we kind of love them and leave them before they're even a client, as we pass that lead off, he's going to share with us some insights on how to engage them to the point where they'll refer business to us. Okay, so without further ado, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for that, Mary Lou. Glad to be with you.
So, okay, let's get this. Let's get the height thing talked about. How tall are you?
So I'm about 6'8", wow. Or as sometimes I will say, I'm 5'20". And speaking of top of the funnel, I mean, it's one of those funny things, right? If I show up at a trade show or a conference, I will literally stand out. Sometimes people will ask, like, hey, does it get old for people to ask you, do you play basketball or do you like playing tall, or, hey, you know, watch your head, or how's the weather up there, or whatever. But to be honest with you, I enjoy it. Like, it's a good icebreaker. It's a conversation starter. I mean, if I walk into an elevator, someone's going to say something, because I'm going to be usually taller than everybody. And so it's a way to just, you know, smile, laugh, you know, we're all made differently, have a little conversation about it. And we've had a lot of fun conversations on trade show floors about that. And it's just, you know, trade shows, conferences, anything in person is all about just making friends. And then later, hey, what do you do? Oh, cool. I'll try it. That's awesome. But they rarely work if you pitch with business first, right? It's all person first and then business second.
Well, what we like to talk about is, you know, grabbing people's attention and really getting that emotional connection in a very quick moment of time, if you can. And then only when it makes sense to phase over into the logic of specificity around here's the opportunity, yada, yada, yada. But up front, it's really about trying to get some way for people to kind of open their eyes or lean in or jolt them out of their stupor and recognize you and notice you. So that's all good. So tell us about your company and tell us about some of these great tips. Let's start with the company. What do you do?
Yeah, so our company is called Cirrus Insight, and like you said, before we started the show, we kind of joked because sometimes people will call us Cirrus Insight, or last year I got introduced once as coming from Citrus Insight, which we liked because then we did an April Fool's joke that we were an orange juice company, and then most recently someone said Circus Insight, which I thought sounded like the coolest company. Maybe we could do analytics for circus companies. But now it's Cirrus, like the cloud. We make cloud software for sales teams. So we were the first application 6 years ago when we launched that connected Gmail with Salesforce. So for our users who are primarily salespeople, it's a big time-saving tool. Rather than jumping back and forth between the inbox and Salesforce, we bring Salesforce in the inbox. So you work from one place, which is where you're having customer conversations, and then our application makes it really easy to get all of those activities, all that sales tracking into your CRM platform. Meanwhile, we also have all the productivity tools that help people save a lot of time these days. So a meeting scheduler, email templates, email open tracking, the ability to schedule out cadences of emails over time and phone scripts and so forth. So, you know, it's really a suite of power tools for salespeople.
So you're obviously deep in the weeds in prospecting. So why don't you share with us some of the main things that you've been discovering, couple things that you've been discovering over the last year, and what doesn't work, just so we can get that on the table as well from your experience of selling into, it sounds like a transactional, maybe not super complex sale, but there could be a lot of working parts to it.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, and just a quick heads up, the audio there sounded a little bit, it was cutting in and out for me, but hopefully we're still fine on the actual recording. But I know that for us, you know, some of the things that worked really well in the past work less well now. And some of the things that didn't work at all, we're finding are starting to work. So an example of the first one, I think that, you know, 5 years ago, even, it was a race to whoever had the biggest mailing list would win, right? Whoever had more email addresses was going to win, because it was just a race to get access to the attention span of the recipients, and we could find them in the inbox. Now, though, everyone is emailing everybody all the time, so it's less about how big the list is. I mean, the size of the list still matters, but it's more about, do the people anticipate your communications? Are they fun? Are they engaging? Do people mind receiving them? Are they interesting? And so the bar has been raised as far as what does it take to get the attention of those recipients and get them involved in the top of your funnel by email. Meanwhile, when we were a small company, we also thought, you know, what we need is like this viral engine. We need people sharing about our application with others. And we tried that a couple times, and neither time did it catch, like, at all. So we invested a lot of time and energy and some money, some resources into how do we build this referral network. And we kind of decided, at least at the time, that two things weren't working well. One is we're business to business. And we thought, oh, maybe all these companies that we're seeing have all this success are really more B2C. They're appealing to these huge demographics of, you know, tens of millions of people could potentially use the software, whereas our target market was substantially smaller. So we thought that may be our problem. And two, we thought, well, maybe we don't have enough customers yet. Maybe we're not seeding the idea to enough people that can then share it. And so the math wasn't in our favor. Who knows? Or we just didn't do it properly. Anyway, we just recently relaunched what we call our referral program. And like you hinted at the top of the show, we're not only enlisting our customers to say, you know, dear customer, here's a code that you can use to spread the word about Cirrus Insight. And if someone wants to start a free trial, then we will give them a $5 Amazon gift card, and we will give you, as the referrer, a $5 Amazon gift code also. So give one, get one. We've also invited prospects to do the same thing. So if you're a prospect and you come to cirrusinsight.com or go to cirrusinsight.com/referral, you can get your code, your referral code. And then for those that are mathematically inclined, you can take that code and pop it in your web browser and start a trial. Then you've started a trial, so you get one, and you get another one because you just referred yourself. So you can actually start off with a $10 gift card, and then you can then share the code with everybody. So if you're, you know, a person that's popular in your company, or you do a lot of networking and you've got friends at lots of other companies, being able to share that code internally and externally as a way to get a lot of folks on board pretty quickly. So if you want to share your code to 100 people that start, you know, free, no obligation trials of Cirrus Insight, then we'll give you 100 times $5 gift codes. We'll send you a code for $500 for Amazon, which is great, right? It's almost the same as cash, because you can buy pretty much anything on Amazon. And so that is starting to catch, and we're excited to see it. So we're getting the word out in every channel that we can think of. So it's become a big focus area for us to spread the news via social media. We're obviously sending out codes by email. It's on our website, just as a small banner at the top. We include it in the footer of our marketing emails. We're adding it to our signature blocks when we're emailing out people just directly through Gmail. So it's something that we're really trying to put some energy into, you know, to find out if it's going to work or not, to find out if it can get that critical mass and kind of start the flywheel that is, you know, quote unquote, viral marketing, so that if enough people start telling enough people, it can sort of get some energy of its own, and we'll start seeing, you know, kind of the exponential growth in trial starts. And then from there, obviously, it's our job. So that's spending a bunch of money up front to get trial starts, and then it becomes the job of our team through marketing and sales and excellent customer service and support to make sure that we translate those trial starts, convert them at a pretty good clip into paying customers.
Yeah, because most of the time when we talk about referrals, we do focus on the client base. And it often brought up the question, well, what if I'm a startup? I don't have any clients yet that I can ask for referrals. And then when do you place that ask? You know, when is the best time to place the ask for referral? Is it as they're going through the sales process? Like, say we got them to an opportunity as a prospect. They've engaged with us. They're bringing people from their company. So we're getting to know each other better. We've scoped out what their needs were, what the initiatives are, and how we fit into that. That seems to be a logical place to just place the kind of, I'm going to be asking you, once you become a customer and are happy, about referrals. So you kind of preempt letting them know that somewhere down the line, we're going to have a discussion around referrals. That was the one way that I was taught way back when in the dark ages of selling.
Still great advice, right? It still works.
Yes, it still works.
We should all keep doing, right?
Yes, yeah. For sure. And the other thing is, you know, when I work with clients, I have them draw a box and make a four quadrant box to tell me how they want to do their business development. And if their business development is with existing clients selling new products or existing clients that they're trying to create a more synergistic usage of the product, so they add in features of the product that are paid for features, so they grow the average deal size of a client. That whole quadrant where it's client related is a place that I think a referral engine works really well. But I was stumped on the new side of how to get people in, because we're using relationships and we're using rapport and trust in our relationship referral kind of machine with the client. I wasn't sure how to do that when you were working with prospects. So you mentioned incentives. Are there other things that you've tried from a prospect perspective to get them to refer without incenting them with money or gifts or things like that?
It's a great question. I mean, I think, you know, certainly having something out there, and it depends on the price point of your product and et cetera, to see what makes the most sense. But, you know, we've seen gifts range the gamut from you know, very small to the $5 gift codes like we're using, all the way up to, you know, big ticket items. We've had stuff arrive for the office when we start piloting something that we're going to use. And it's like, oh, wow, you know, someone just sent us a air hockey table. Like, that's pretty cool. You know, the office rallies around it. And then, of course, the big question is, whose is this? Okay, who got it and why did it arrive here? And then someone raises their hand like, oh, yeah, I'm trying out this platform we might use for whatever. And so I guess they sent it to us. And everyone goes, well, I don't know who that company is, but I like them. You know, sounds like a good group to do business with. So incentives certainly help. I think, another way, at least in the software game, that can be popular is simply saying, hey, the software gets better the more people that are on it. And I think, you know, a lot of companies that are much bigger and more successful than really any others that we could think of have done this. So companies like Dropbox and Evernote, where it's like, a Dropbox is cool as a backup tool if I just want to take everything and just store it there in like a lockbox. It's safe. But it gets better if I can send a link to a file that I've uploaded. That way, I don't have to attach it, and I don't have to figure out some other way to send this massive file. I just send a link. But of course, when the person gets that link, then they also have to sign up. And so those are great kind of community-based viral networks, if you will, because I haven't sent a message saying, you know, hey, dear recipient, you really ought to try Dropbox. It's so cool. Instead, it's just I'm sending you something, and to get access to it, you have to try it. Those ones I think are brilliant if it aligns, you know, with your business model, to be able to get those out. But of course, a lot of those companies have also used, at least from time to time, various incentives for them, for the Dropboxes and Evernotes, et cetera, of the world. Oftentimes it's a certain amount of time for free or just additional capacity, right? More storage, get another gig if you sign up now or try now for free, et cetera, or add a friend and you add another gig. You can add gigs and gigs without paying just by getting more people to try the service. I think those are smart because that way the company's not out of pocket. The referrer gets something they want, more storage, and the recipient's no worse for wear either. So everyone can be pretty happy about it.
Yeah, so that's adding existing perks on that to the product that doesn't really cost you a lot because they're already developed, so to speak. But it adds goodwill because you're giving them more storage or you're giving them another feature that you're turning on for them, things like that.
Sorry to interrupt. I think absolutely right. And the one that quickly popped into my mind when you used the word, incentives, it's like there's the paid incentives and there's kind of the extra or additional product built in, which is pretty easy to give away. you know, I think that a company, and you see lots of them out there, but Salesforce does this, Microsoft does this, you know, the value of badges, right? Just recognition of people. So, you know, early adopters, folks that are evangelists for a Salesforce or a Microsoft or a Google, and they'll say, hey, you're an MVP, and you can put this badge on your LinkedIn or in your email signature. And then maybe, you know, once a year, we're going to invite you to a special conference. You get a special seat, or you get to meet this executive or have an online, you know, chat panel. Tesla does this too, right? So they have referral codes. And if you give away enough, then you get invitations to special events they might have, right? We're going to unveil our big factory in the desert, and you get to be there for it. Oh, cool. So those types of things are in some ways like very experiential. Like there's a value to it. You're invited to a conference. There would normally be a ticket cost, but it's also special. Like it's just, you couldn't buy a ticket to have the special audience with that executive. You've kind of earned it by being an influencer.
Right. So the scarcity, you know, there's only so many people that this happens for, and because you're being recognized as a loyal contributor to the company and the goodwill of the company, there's some special perks for you. I love that.
Yeah, which is pretty great. Yeah. I mean, if all of us can build brands that have that kind of affinity, right, where people just want to be close to it and want to get even closer, like they're willing to spread the word just so that they can have premier status or get the badge or get additional points, what have you, then that's a pretty great situation.
I mean, I did this when we launched the second book, Predictable Prospecting. I had a bank of what I call loyal fans, and who are just chomping at the bit to do whatever I ask, within reason, of course. But, you know, in this case, I was saying, hey, I'll give you an advanced copy of the book. You'll get an actual hard copy of the book signed by me, sent to you via snail mail. So there is some payment to do that. And I ask for a review in return once you've read the book and, you know, your brutal, honest opinion about the book. So I had a bunch of people who were willing, wanting to do that. And it's so great to have them rally behind you when something like this is getting launched. And I'm getting ready to do a third book now. So, you know, seeing who my army is and trying to get them all corralled and figured out as to how we want to go about doing this launch, this next launch. It's the same concept.
Yeah, and it seems...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems like you've had, you know, success with it because, you know, you're making it fun. I mean, I remember my brother and I, and we grew up in the sticks, and so my dad wants to help out on the property, you know, pulling weeds, right, hammering in staples on the fences, et cetera. And so, you know, we kind of get started early in the morning, and he'd be like, no, you're going too slow, right? Like, we want to, like, be fully present, like, engaged in the activity. He's like, how to do that is you got to make it a game, make it fun for everybody that's participating. So you'd say, why don't you two, you know, race each other, right? Which brother is going to pull the most weeds in the next 15 minutes, right? Or who can get to the top of the hill on the fence? And all of a sudden it's like, well, so we made the job harder on ourselves. We're doing it faster. We're working harder. But it became a lot more fun, right? You come in for lunch and it's like, well, I made it to the top of the hill a little bit faster than you did today. And it's like, you know, enlisting people to be like, hey, you know, I really need your help to help me sell books is not like the most awesome pitch, but it's like, hey, we want to go out and really circulate this book. It's going to be so exciting. We're going to get in front of a lot of people. They're going to love the book. They're going to send us kudos. I'm going to give you a free copy of the book, or I'm going to put you in the acknowledgments or sling us on the website, or I'll give you a shout out somewhere, and it's going to be really fun. And plus you get to learn from the process. So if you ever want to write a book, then you can follow my playbook that we've implemented, and you will have been part of it. It's the same sort of thing that works so well in political campaigns, right, for recruiting folks that just want to help, but they buy in, right? There's a belief in the vision of you know, what the candidate is trying to accomplish. So, yeah, I love those types of campaigns and the extent we can harness that energy as we try to build brands, whether, you know, for us, we're selling software, no matter what you're selling. You know, if you get people excited about where you're going with the whole enterprise, then I think you do find that folks are eager just to be part of it, just to have that experience of selling the book or selling the software licenses or growing a business, so they can say, yeah, I was there back when it was small, and it's not so small anymore because I exerted some influence in this whole process. I was part of it.
Right. And I actually call them my influencers. So they're my influencer network because they even drive to some extent the table of contents of the book, what they'd like to see. Right now I've got them in a class that I'm doing, And I get plenty of feedback, what they like, what they don't like. And it's all open, wonderful dialogue, back and forth. They're, you know, these guys are taking my body of work and activating it, deploying it, optimizing it. So, you know, and at scale, because I'm just one person. I can only do so many accounts, but multiply that by my fan base, all doing it. And we get some great feedbacks of what works and what doesn't and how to improve. So I love it. It's like the best thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, our best feature ideas, I'd love to take credit for more of them than I can, but almost exclusively our best feature ideas have come from customers, right? Posting on, we have a big forum through User Voice that we collect feature requests. And invariably, the best ideas have come from customers saying, you know, it'd be great is if I could do this. And then folks will pile on, right? Oh, yeah, I would wear that out. I would use that every day. That would save me so many hours. And we're like, wow. Well, we have this other idea, but we're going to scrap that one or put it down on the totem pole, and we're going to elevate this customer's idea because everyone's going crazy for it. And, you know, to the extent that we've had success, it's been because we've listened to those ideas and then, you know, worked our tails off to implement it as fast as possible and get it to market, you know, before anyone else can, because we feel like if the customer shared it with us, that may be the first time someone shared that idea. So if we can get it out to market fast, it's a big competitive advantage for our customers.
Definitely. Well, I want to be respectful of time. We're hitting close to the top of the hour here. I heard you say something, and I want you to drill down a bit for us on it. This whole concept of, it used to be that we could just, the person with the biggest list blasting out emails wins. And you said that landscape has changed. Walk me through, because I'm a big proponent of blending personalization, what I call hyper-personalization, and then leveraging the data to personalize email messages. So it's the while you're sleeping engine, but smarter. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on, if I were to take my segment of accounts, do I create tiers? And those tiers basically are built based on how much personalization, customized personalization, hyper-personalization, whatever you want to call it, that I want to do to that group, those dream clients versus everybody else? Or do you blanket personalize now every communication coming out of your shop?
Yeah, we definitely don't, you know, ultra personalize everything. Because, you know, we have a list of several hundred thousand folks, and some of whom we know really well, and they know us really well, and some that are brand new to us, right? We just met them last week at an event, let's say. So we don't know each other that well yet. So we're going to send them things, you know, from Cirrus Insight, the company and the brand. And then our sales team will reach out directly one-on-one and try to send those more, you know, personalized. Hey, we've done a little research. We kind of see what your company does, what you're about, maybe where you're trying to go. Maybe we've worked in your industry before or with companies that are about the same size. So we are looking for these areas of what we think are relevant personalization. So if we can go to them and say, you know, we already work with three or four companies in your industry, that helps a lot, right? Because they're going to say, oh, yeah, of course we know them. They're our competitors, or we collaborate with those folks. And or we serve companies that are around your same size. That's very relevant. And these are messages that I like receiving too. If someone says, look, we've done a lot of work with software as a service companies. Here are a few. I'll probably recognize the names. I'll be like, okay, that's relevant to Cirrus Insight. But if they come and say, you know, we haven't done a lot of work in the software industry, but we do serve a lot of companies that are between 50 and 100 employees. I say, okay, that's relevant. But the reason I bring this up is that so many, and all of us, I think, do this because it's a little bit of a herd mentality, but we all look at the logo stripes that are on everybody's website, and then we go and we try to cherry pick some of our best customers, and we put the logos up there. But now all of us are seeing those logos, whether they're in emails or on websites, and just saying, no, that's not me. I'm not, you know, I'm not Google. I'm not Facebook. How is this tool or service or product relevant to my business, right? When I've got 5 employees or 50 employees, or if I'm located in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is where we're based, versus if I'm in, you know, San Francisco or New York, it's just pretty different. So if you can find some commonalities that jump out to people that, you know, someone wrote to me today and said, hey, we've served a few software companies. We work with companies, you know, 50, 75 employees. Also, you know, we've worked with several firms, you know, one's in Lexington, one's in Atlanta. And I'm like, wow, that's great. That's in my neck of the woods. I might know some of these people. I might have seen their businesses before. So it's that type of personalization that I think it resonates with me. I think we found some success with it. just because people say, okay, like they get me. They're not throwing at me like, we've worked with software companies before and they're all the largest in the world. Like, well, you know, most of us haven't gone that big yet. So it makes sense. I think, you know, for us, we do send out, you know, what I will call marketing emails, which are going to be about, this is what our service does. This is some of the value prop. Here's a highlight. We're trying to use themes for those emails. If we know your size or your industry or something else about you, we'll try to personalize it with that variable. We'll also try to make it worthwhile to open, right? So hopefully it'll make you smile or laugh, or if that's our angle, if it's kind of a comedic angle, or vice versa, if we're trying to, you know, resonate with, like, you want to work smart or you want to have more control or more freedom. These are big, like, themes for people that work in sales. And then if our sales team, if they're sending out, you know, quote unquote sales emails, then those are going to be, right, very short, to the point, plain text. Hey, I've got something, I'd like to show it to you, or here's a link that you can click and get all the information you need, and I'm in and out of your inbox, and you can process this email through just the preview, right? So if you've got preview on your phone, you can basically see the whole email in the preview. I'm not going to, you know, use up a lot of your time by drilling into the email and thinking you need to respond. If you want to book a meeting with us, just click the link. You don't even have to reply. Just click the link and it'll automatically schedule the meeting. We do that through our software, the meeting scheduling feature. So making it super easy for recipients to action the email, I think, is becoming, for me at least, like the number one thing that we can do to help our customers schedule time with us. And the number one thing I appreciate when I'm receiving an email, I don't really like the, you know, hey, tell me your availability next week. I'd love to schedule a meeting. Well, that just sounds like work for me. Like, now I have to go look through my calendar and tell you when I'm available. I think I'll just not reply. Versus if you say, if you embed your availability in the email, here are 10 times that work. If you see one that jumps out at you, just click it and it's over, right? The meeting will go on both of our calendars. That's awesome. That's respectable of everybody's time. And it just says, I get it. You're busy. And I do have something and you want to see it. And so we'll meet up for 15 minutes next week. So those types of things, I think, yeah, you still want to build that big email list, finding ways to personalize though that are meaningful, I think is the most important. And I'll add as an aside, I've gotten some of the emails that are written by non-humans, right? The AI crafted emails. And it so far it leaves quite a bit to be desired. Right. So it'll see that I'm in Knoxville and it'll say, like, you know, dear Brandon, I see you're in Knoxville. Have you ever been to the Tennessee Theater? It looks like you have a river running through your city, you know, and it's like, who says that? Right. Like, what normal person says that? That's not hyper personalized. That's hyper weird. And so we do like try to avoid that to the extent we can. Personalized now, I think, means more and needs to mean more than hi first name, which was state of the art, right? Several years ago, you address person by name. That's awesome. It was to them. Now it needs to be more about, you know, how do we connect on some level? And I don't think it needs to be on every variable, but pick one or two or three variables that you can say, yeah, we know they're in this industry and we have something to say about that. We have something smart that we can say about that. Then have that be your whole email and don't try to go overboard.
I agree. And I think the other thing that you mentioned that is becoming more the norm is the small batch approach, which, believe it or not, back in 2011, when predictable revenue was released, it was the small batch approach. We were looking at 25 to 50, maybe, emails a day, which included second and third iterations. So if we're working on a sequence, the second and third touches were included in that 25 to 50 emails. We were using data, leveraging the data to personalize to the point where we thought we were collecting relevant information and enriching our database. And very seldom did we stop the sequence to edit the email, to type in whatever personalization pieces we wanted. We did that with our dream accounts, but everybody else, we leveraged the opportunity to be able to collect in the database what we felt were the relevant talking points, and then using technology to populate the email for us. And I still work that way today. I told my students, I said, if you think you're getting a personalized, a hyper-personalized email from Mary Lou Tyler for this class, think again. And they laughed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm leveraging the database to have a conversation for relevant topics. When I hear them talk about a pain point, I put that pain point in the database, and then I have a sequence that activates, or a playlist, whatever you want to call it, that activates based on that pain point, based on what type of company they are, for example. So there's ways to do this to still reach out to more people in a respectful way, an authentic way, and hit the right conversation track without having to stop the sequence and type something in and then send it on its way, which is where I think people need to go.
Yeah, and I love the tools that have added the dynamic aspect, we'll call it post-send. So rather than personalize and then send, you're essentially sending out an email that will personalize dynamically based on a variable. So for example, geography, right? So you stagger it out and it's hitting people's inbox the same time, regardless of location, or the ones that are going to be based on, you know, weather. So, you know, someone in the Northeast today would get an email like, man, it's cold. Are you getting slammed by snow too? You know, and then maybe it's an ad for a coffee. Whereas if you're, you know, in Florida, where I was over the weekend, then that same email might be like, whew, it's heating up. You know, grab your iced coffee. Whereas if you got that today in New York or D.C., you'd be like, why would I want an iced coffee? Like, snow's blowing in. This is silly.
Right.
So
right.
It's a way to make it relevant where it's like, oh, we get you. Like, it's the first hot day, and so it's time to switch to iced coffee. Those technologies, I think, are pretty cool.
Definitely.
And make opening the email interesting. And then, you know, you have the same recipient open the email multiple times, and it changes every time. And that's kind of a fun experience where it's like, oh, it's different now because I boarded a plane and I opened the same email in Chicago and now the message is different. That's trippy.
Yeah.
And so it adds this whole level of like, wow, what's going on here? And some of it can be a little, it can weird some people out, but it can also be kind of a topic of conversation and be kind of engaging.
Yeah, definitely. So, Brandon, people are listening to this thing. I want to know more about this Brandon guy. How do we get a hold of you? What's the best way?
Sure. I'm easy to reach. Our website is Cirrus, like the cloud, Cirrus, insight.com. My email is Brandon@CirrusInsight.com. I'm on LinkedIn, you know, every day. So you hit me with messages there. And if you ever find yourself traveling to or from or through Knoxville, Tennessee, definitely look us up and we'll have you over for a company lunch or point you in the right direction and take a tour of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park or go catch a football game or get some great barbecue.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I'll be sure to put all your contact information on the notes page. You have a page just dedicated to you, Brandon, and I'll put all the relevant links there for everybody. Thank you so much for your time and great success in your company. It sounds like a fun time for you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Look forward to keeping in touch. And to anybody who reaches out, we will definitely connect you with that $5 Amazon gift code. We'll make sure to keep that running for as long as possible so anyone listening to the show weeks or months from now gets a fair shot at it.